welcome to Change Surfer Radio. For the next half hour, keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left as we present a sexy high-tech vision of our radically democratic future.
This week on the Event Horizon, we're going to be discussing political economy, the systematic critique of capitalism. With the collapse of the communist model in Eastern Europe, though, we should point out that 1 billion people are still living under communism around the world, or some form of it. Most people had assumed in the United States that systematic critique of capitalism was no longer on the table. But in the last year, capitalist economies around the world have also been collapsing. The Russian, Asian, and Latin American models going by the wayside. And so systematic critique may be back on the boards. And some of us have never really given up on that systematic critique. I've been a member since 1982 of an organization called Democratic Socialists of America, and haven't been in touch with the home organization for quite a while. So I'm touching base today with Jessica Shearer, who's national youth organizer for the Young Democratic Socialists. Welcome, Jessica.
Hi, thank you.
I want to have an introduction for my listeners to what we mean by democratic socialism. What is democratic socialism versus, say, liberalism on one side, and on the other side, the models of communism, and have that as a beginning discussion. Do you have a basic spiel that you give college students when you do your organizing about that?
Sure. Democratic socialism is fundamentally different, first, from communism, which it's more likely to be associated with, in that it's fundamentally democratic in both the political development of the system and economically. The idea behind it is that not only are political decisions sort of ratified by the populace or made by people elected directly, but the economic decisions themselves are something that people, especially as represented by labor unions and other organized groups, have some say over. So it's fundamentally different from dictatorships and other forms of communism, where there was a centralized economy and even less control over economic and political decisions than we have in capitalist democracies such as our own.
I ask these questions somewhat disingenuously, since I also have my own answers to them. But what do we say, what do you say when you do organizing in terms of whether there have been models for the kind of democratic socialism that DSA advocates?
I think that the closest thing to a model that for the kind of democratic socialism we advocate is to be found in Europe, in the social democracies, especially in Scandinavia, and also to lesser extent in France and in Germany, and Britain had, you know, the outlines of one. So, I mean, that I think is the closest to the way that we would organize our economy and our political system. Of course, I personally, and most of us at DSA and in the Young Democratic Socialists, want to go further than that, and not just sort of mollify capitalism, take away some of the harsher elements of it, but to really give workers and ordinary people control over economic processes and companies and business itself.
Now, there have been parties all over the world for a century now calling themselves socialist in various governments.
Mm-hmm.
What's DSA's relationship to those other social democratic and labor and socialist parties?
Well, there's the Socialist International, which has, I think at this point, maybe 140 parties who call themselves socialist or democratic socialist or social democrats all over the world. And we're, I guess, at the adult level, we share a seat in the Socialist International with the Social Democrats USA. However, at the youth level, where I've been active in that, we're the only representative from the United States, and we're one of the only groups that doesn't represent a party, that is a separate political organization, but that doesn't hold seats or put forward candidates.
No, our sister parties in Europe have been very successful of late. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, they've been extremely successful. I think it's now 13 of the 15 countries in the European Union are controlled by social democratic governments. And it's been really significant in terms of looking at how Europe is shaping its relationship to the global economy as opposed to the way, say, the NAFTA states have been dominated by the U.S., have been responding to the global economy there. I mean, there's a social charter giving rights, specifically rights to labor and citizens while expanding trade across borders, whereas here there are really meaningless enforcements for workers and the environment and increased rights for capital and business and industries and crossing borders. So I think that that's one of the places it's been most significant, but it's also something that I see on campuses is people responding to that and seeing that, you know, socialism, it's unique that socialism is such a dirty word here. It has a strong, rich legacy in almost every other part of the world.
So one way to characterize what's happening in Europe is that European governments, socialist governments, are allying together to present a united front to capitalism, while America is trying to encourage governments to join a race to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
That in terms of international competitiveness.
Yeah, that's definitely the way things are going.
Now, is socialism for the Young Democratic Socialists and for DSA simply a word that refers to economic policy, the amelioration of poverty and so on, or does it have a broader cultural and political agenda?
Oh, certainly. It has a broader cultural and political agenda. I mean, culturally, I mean, it's about how we organize our priorities. It's about whether we put people and their lives and their relationships and their health and their security sort of at the top of our agenda, or whether we put profit at the top of our agenda. And without any real agreement on it, the capitalists and business and most of the people in both the Democratic and Republican parties have put profit at the top of the agenda. And I think that socialism is really about reorganizing things so that, people's lives are, and that schooling and education and health and relationships become far more important, and profit, becomes not the way we organize our society.
So within the gambit of socialist thought and social democratic ideas, there's also particular approaches to sexuality and to gender and to race relations.
And certainly feminism, unlike most other socialist organizations, even in this country, feminism is a central part of what DSA and the Young Democratic Socialists argue for. I mean, the thought that you could possibly create a system based on equality and an egalitarian system and still have, racial stratification and gender stratification, it's unacceptable to people in the Young Democratic Socialists and in DSA, because it's precisely those kinds of stratifications and class stratifications that allow the system we're in now to continue. And we think that, you both have to equalize those relationships and create, and do anything you can to move those relationships back onto equal ground and move forward from that purpose. That, it's not just about class, it's not just about the economy, but it's about, how we've been able to stratify our society to satisfy the needs of business, and how we need to reorganize our society to satisfy the needs of people.
On the webpage for this radio show, I've linked back to DSA's website, as well as to a conference that I found when I searched for your name. I found that you had helped organize a conference last April in Berkeley, a number of different student organizations. Now, it's true that DSA is one of the largest and only multi-issue student organizations active on college campuses. Is that correct?
I mean, we have important allies on the student movement who are also quite left. They have less breadth and less ideology than DSA does. But there's the Center for Campus Organizing, the United States Student Association, even SEEK, the Student Environmental Action Coalition, is certainly not as narrowly focused as their name might suggest. But we're definitely the largest, ideological multi-issue group on campuses, and we've had, you know, a couple conferences a year that brought 50 to many more students together to talk about that and to strategize around that and to decide how to do campaigns to get our vision across to other students and people.
I'm a great believer in demographic determinism, which isn't often considered ideologically correct perspective, but it seems like a lot of the children of the baby boom, the liberal baby boomers, are now beginning to filter onto campuses. Are you seeing a renewed interest in activism among college students?
Yeah, I think there is, and especially the kind of activism. I think one of the most interesting turns in activism recently is the interest in labor activism that young people have shown, led by the AFL-CIO and Unite. There's a lot of new efforts and initiatives to get young people involved in these projects, and students have responded really strongly, and I think that it's one of the places where we're most likely to see radicalism on student formations, and we've been working with those groups quite a bit. So, yeah, I think there is a mild upswing in student activism. It's not what people might come to expect when they think about student activism, because most of the images of that are dominated by, you know, the 60s, which, you know, just far sort of outpaced in terms of number the kind of activism we're seeing now on campuses. But I definitely think that it's increased a bit.
And about how many campuses are you active on right now?
We're active on about 25 campuses.
Mm-hmm. Are you doing any work in Connecticut?
Yeah, we have a new member of our coordinating committee. Rebecca Tidwell is based in Connecticut, and she's not actually on a campus there, but she's been successful in identifying students at the University of Connecticut, at Wesleyan, and at a couple other Connecticut state schools who seem very interested in labor and in prison issues, which are two of the major things that DSA and YDS work on.
If people are interested in contacting you, Jessica, how can they get a hold of you?
The easiest way to get a hold of me for most students is probably my email address, which is jsheer@dsausa.org. I can also be reached at our national office, which is 212-727-8610.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Oscar Owens, who's the current national chair of the Young Democratic Socialists. Thank you for joining us, Jessica.
Thank you very much.
Speaking with Oscar Owens, who's the national chair of the Young Democratic Socialists. He's a graduate of New York University, NYU. Welcome, Oscar.
Hi.
So I want to hear a little bit about the projects that the Young Democratic Socialists are active on campuses right now, because most people's perception of student activism is that really not very much is happening on campuses. What projects are you working on?
Right. Well, we've seen a lot of activity on campuses where we have chapters doing anti-sweatshop work and work around free trade issues. Students have been finding out that clothing that their school sells, the merchandise that they sell with their athletic wear and clothing that carries the school's logo is often made in sweatshops. And some of our chapters have been involved in activism, getting their universities to sign on to codes of conduct or to pressure the collegiate licensing company, which controls contracts for about 168 universities, to adopt a code of conduct for manufacturers who sell clothing for use in university apparel. Other schools have actually brought sweatshop workers to come speak to students to help inform them and educate them about the experience and the factors at work in creating sweatshops in the global economy, and help students to participate in the broad international movement to help stop sweatshops and connect the creation of sweatshops to the kinds of free trade agreements that we've seen develop, like NAFTA.
Mm-hmm. You're also involved in prison reform work.
That's right. Another one of the major projects that we have going right now is called the Prison Moratorium Project. especially in New York and California, though some of our contacts are trying to develop this in other states, we've started coalitions, statewide coalitions, to push state governments to stop the funding of new prisons, since we've seen a quadrupling of prison construction in this country over the last couple of decades, and we have not seen a reduction in crime that's equivalent to that. That building prisons has not led to an adequate reduction in crime to justify the massive costs that we are incurring to build these prisons, and the costs are often being taken out of things like education funding, things like health care funding, things like jobs retraining programs, and things that we feel actually help to prevent crime. So in the states that we've developed national coalitions, we've helped lobby state legislatures and do grassroots activism to push for transferring money away from prison construction and back into education, healthcare, and jobs training programs.
Now, I was also intrigued to learn that you're organizing around Social Security, which is a very timely topic given the president's new initiative, which some have suggested that the president's initiative to invest Social Security into the stock market would give the United States government more than 50% control over all major corporations in the country. President Clinton turns out to be a more radical socialist than any European socialist have ever been. But is that why we got involved in that?
No, we were thinking of getting involved in Social Security activism, you know, before the president was making these statements. Actually, for quite a while now, conservative think tanks and foundations have been finding ways to use, to promote their particular agendas for Social Security in the name of youth, and make it look as if, you know, my generation is so worried about whether Social Security is going to be there that they favor complete privatization solutions, that they feel that they're competing with the baby boom generation. And we felt that these claims that were being made on behalf of Generation X and people of our generation are largely not true, and that you know, we should put our voice out there as the voice of some young people who feel that there's much better solutions to Social Security's possible shortfall than privatizing, which would put us all in a great deal of risk, I think, in the case that we do incur disability, or that you know, we do reach retirement and the stock market is not doing as well as it is today. So we are trying to develop activism that promotes a sensible solution that we feel is out there to Social Security, which is to raise the cap for Social Security tax, which would simply, you know, tax the wealthy more to help make up the small difference that we need to ensure that Social Security funds will be available when we need it, and will maintain the essential feature of Social Security, which is a collective investment of the funds, you know, a collective, collective contributions that ensure that your risk is not individual. That if you haven't saved up the money yourself, you know, because you haven't been making enough money, that is not going to prevent you from having security in old age or in case, you incur an injury.
Now, there's a fundamental difference between the kind of issues that you're addressing and the kind of identity politics that most campus activism seems to have been dominated by for the last 20 years, and a very balkanization of campuses into gay activism and people of color activism. Can you say something about the way that economic justice campaigns create a different dynamic in campus politics?
Well, I think there's a great process that's happening, just in the last few years that is going to mean really good things for progressive politics on campus, which is that, you know, economic activism and identity activism, which have been sort of separate for the last couple of decades, are really coming together once again and seeing how much they overlap, and that, you know, feminist clubs on campus are seeing that things like sweatshops and economic inequality,
welfare reform
are still very gendered issues, and that sometimes economics and free trade and things like that are actually some of the biggest factors in gender inequality and racial inequality. And at the same time, labor activists and people working on economic issues are really realizing that sexual inequality and racism really undermine any possibility for us to work towards economic inequality in such a divided society. So we've seen a lot of coalitions springing up and a lot of cooperation starting to happen between feminist clubs, environmentalist clubs, anti-racist clubs, and socialist clubs on campus to work at broad campaigns that really get to the heart of the matter, that approach things like globalization and labor rights from a perspective that deals with them as a feminist issue, as a race issue, and as a class issue.
Another and for the final point that I'd like you to speak about is the great success of the Progressive Caucus in Congress, that for a long time DSA's strategy had been to try to bring together, to coalesce a left-wing caucus within the Democratic Party that could be the basis for the kind of political initiatives that the DSA supports. And now we finally have that. Can you say something about that?
Yeah, it's really one of the hidden stories of the last election that, of the sort of surprising Democratic victory that happened when the Republicans shot themselves in the foot, an even better success rate than the sort of centrist Clinton-esque Democrats was that nearly all of the really progressive Democrats that were running for re-election and for election against incumbents won their races and had a very high success rate. The Progressive Caucus in the Congress has been growing steadily and growing at a faster rate than many of the other caucuses and committees in Congress. So we feel that there is a slow swelling and that reflects a support out there, in the population for progressive politics as an alternative to the sort of centrism that the Republicans and many of the traditional Democrats have been standing for. And we've seen the continual reelection of the independent Bernie Sanders and progressive Democrats like Paul Wellstone, who was the only senator who voted against the welfare reform bill while he was running for re-election, and he got re-elected.
Well, that's been great. I'd really like to have you and Jessica up here for an in-studio interview at some point.
So, that would be great.
Plan a trip up here, and we'll do that. You can check out DSA's website by linking to the Event Horizon website or going directly to www.dsausa.org. There are many links there, links to the Progressive Caucus and so on. How can people contact you, Oscar?
You can leave messages in the same mailbox as Jessica's at 212-727-8610, or you can email me at upwardspiral@hotmail.com.
Great. Thanks for joining us.
Sure. Thank you.
You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS-FM at the University of Connecticut in Storrs. If you want to learn more about radical democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about this show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes, J-H-U-G-H-E-S, at changesurfer.com. Also, check out past and future shows and myriad relevant links at the website, www.changesurfer.com.